On today's Josh Nason's Punch Out, we divert from the year in review series in pro wrestling and take a trip onto a different highway, that being the year in review in mixed martial arts. The beginning of the four-part series has arrived with a stop in January, February, and March. Joining me, as always, to walk through the entire year in mixed martial arts is Paul Fontaine of this very website, as well as the Fight Game Media Network. Paul and I talk about everything that happened in the first 3 months, including the month of Francis Ngannou being pissed off with the UFC, still winning a fight to essentially unify the UFC heavyweight title, and then everything else that happened after that. We also have a major grudge that didn't really lead to much in the cage in terms of real action between Jorge Masvidal and Colby Covington, but things definitely got heated up just a couple weeks later outside a restaurant in Miami. We'll talk more about that. Good fights, Dana White craziness, the usual stuff. Let's get right to it. Myself and Paul Fontaine talking about the first 3 months of 2022 in the world of mixed martial arts. Let's begin. Well, enough about all this pro wrestling talk, the year in review series. Let's get back to what originally started this, which is the MMA year in review series. And helping me once again, as he has for the past few years, Paul Fontaine of this very website, Fight Game Media, and Grandpa Dez's YouTube show, all kinds of stuff. He has returned. Paul, welcome back.
Yeah, the Grandpa Dez, I haven't done a show in a while. I want to get back to it, and I probably will. I had you on early last year.
Yes.
And that was a lot of fun. But I am doing the Fight Game Media stuff. I saw that you have Mike Gilbert on. I don't know if that show's dropped yet. I haven't heard it.
Right. That'll be today. Well, it'll be up by the time people listen to this.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah. Mike's an awesome dude. I did his show last week. And I always have a lot of fun when I do shows with him. But yeah, two shows a week I do on Fight Game Media, and I'm always open for other stuff, and I always like coming on with you. So, I went from, when I first started with you, I had never done anything, and now I'm like, I barely have time for anything else.
I know, you have to doing all these shows, awesome. You got all this stuff going. You finally have a great beard. I remember last time or that when you first started doing this, Mary, you were clean shaven. And wrestling and MMA has brought it out of you. So I like the beard. Good touch.
It varies. I'm basically just I started the Movember thing, and then I just didn't bother shaving it. So and good. Now for the winter, it's real cold up here, so it keeps the face warm.
Good man. We like it. All right. Well, let's talk about some other good men and women. So this is the year review series. It's a little bit different than the wrestling one. We do 3 months at a time. So we'll do four different episodes, one per week, and then one, obviously, after the new year in case things happen the last week of December, as they do sometimes happen. And so this one, obviously, will start with January, February, and March. And again, what I do is I use the Bloody Elbow archives, and I go through this way, about over 400 headlines per month and try to find some of the interesting stuff, the results, all those things. Obviously, not every single result, not every single fight that's made, but kind of the big interesting stuff for the month. I lead off with the kind of the bigger news of the month, and then we kind of go chronological order through the rest, and I'll kick it over to Paul for thoughts on some of the various headlines. But January really started out with this whole month was kind of Francis Ngannou month in a lot of different ways. There was obviously UFC 270, where Francis Ngannou retained his heavyweight title in a unification win over Ciryl Gane, because I've met, if you guys remember from 2021, the UFC pressured Ngannou into fighting. He said, "Can I wait a month?" They said no, and then they made an interim title fight instead. That began kind of a snowball of submissions between the two. And there was a lot of talk about Ngannou's contract. This is obviously the last fight on his deal. And there was just a talk of boxing talk and all this. We'll get into this in just a minute. So we end up retaining the heavyweight title in this win over Ciryl Gane. On this show as well, Deveson Figueiredo reclaiming the flyweight title over Brandon Moreno in their third fight. So there'll be more talk about that as the year goes on. Afterward, Francis Ngannou said he had a torn MCL and damaged ACL. He would later get surgery for that. in March, I believe, and he was out for about, said he was going to be out for 9 or 10 months. Obviously, we're in December, so there's some talk about potentially him returning, which is interesting because, you know, some of the stuff that he was saying here. Afterward, and I completely forgot about this, Dana did not put the belt on Ngannou after the fight ended, and he was not at the press conference afterward. And Ngannou later said he was threatened with a lawsuit by the UFC moments before his fight for talking to Jake Paul about a boxing fight. He claimed he got some strange racist texts from a Las Vegas number earlier in the day. Obviously, that can't really be corroborated back to UFC, but he was kind of tying in this whole, agitated relationship with the UFC after doing such a great thing and such a great relationship for so long. Came down to money and all those things. And leading in this, he said that boxing crossover, the ability to box had to be part of any new deal. As we sit here in December, there is no deal yet, but there's more talk about him fighting. But January really was a month of disagreement between Francis Ngannou and the UFC, and something that would kind of, they're no strangers to fight to issues and fights with their top fighters, especially now in this era where they have guaranteed money. But this was really kind of a bummer how this situation developed, and obviously the year in Ghana was kind of a lost one in a lot of ways.
Yeah, we're almost a year out, and we have not seen Francis Ngannou since this fight, and he very clearly, was the, decisive, heavyweight champion, beat Ciryl Gane, who was the clear number one contender. He was the interim champion coming in, but he was basically the number one contender. And Dana White skipping the press conference, I remember that being a bit controversial at the time. And I mean, it was a very logical explanation. I mean, all he was going to get was questions about Francis Ngannou that he couldn't answer. So in that sense, I'm not trying to make excuses for Dana. He's the last person I would ever want to make excuses for. But in this case, it would have just been wasting everyone's time. And he may have even ended up saying something he wouldn't have been able to take back, mm-hmm. And so probably best that he didn't do that press conference. The Figueiredo and Moreno, it's funny because after that fight, it was like, okay, the only thing that makes sense is another rematch, but we don't want to do another rematch because they've already had three. And here we are, we're, about a month away from number four. Right. And I'm not really even complaining because there's no other real heavy or, big time flyweight fight that anybody is really clamoring for. So, I think what's ended up happening over the last year is the Jake Paul bloom has kind of fallen off that rose. And, I think the last fight he had with Anderson Silva, the pay-per-views were like less than 100,000, and the money probably isn't there now for Francis Ngannou to do a fight with him. So I don't think that is as big a part of the deal as it would have been even a year ago. And now it's just a matter of, UFC deciding to pay him. And the problem is, and this is going to come up over and over again, I haven't, looked ahead at the whole year. Obviously, you've only done the first 3 months, but over and over again, the story of 2022 is going to be UFC not wanting to pay guys. And as a result, we get these pay-per-views that, do not have marquee value on the main event, and nobody's buying them because UFC, we have not got a single pay-per-view buy rate for the whole year. From UFC. So that tells me there's not a single show this year that did 500,000 buys. If they had, we'd have heard about it. So last year we had the average 500,000, and this year I would bet, probably half that, if not less. So, and now it looks like, they're going into negotiations with ESPN soon, probably in about a year, for the next deal, because this deal expires in 2025. So, we're probably looking at early 2024 is when they start negotiating. So it's in UFC's best interests to get these guys under contract. Jones has agreed to a deal. Ngannou apparently is close, and they may do that fight in March is what it's starting to look like. Maybe we're, and they're making stars, Paddy Pimblett, this new Raul Rosas Jr. that's fighting this weekend is a guy to keep an eye on, 18 years old. It's ridiculous. Mm. But this was a down year. This kind of reminds me of 2014, I think maybe when we started doing these shows. You know, and they looked pretty down at the time. And then Connor came up, Rhonda came up, and all of a sudden they, you know, they got that ESPN deal, and you know, they're just swimming in money now. So otherwise, like, you know, the two main events both went to a decision. The Figueiredo fight was great. The main event, not as great. And the rest of the card was just a bunch of dudes.
That's true. I don't
really remember much else from this card. I'm looking over it, and it looks like every single Saturday night. Like these names that, you know, like I know them, Ryan Frederick knows them, and Grabaka Hitman knows them, and no one else on the planet knows them, I think.
Exactly.
Including Dana. Yeah.
Well, so we'll talk more about a lot of those names as the year goes on. Yeah. Obviously, a lot more about the ESPN deal and money and all that stuff to Paul's point. Yeah, it's going to come up a lot. So we'll go over this first chunk, and then I'll kick it over to you, and then we'll go over this second chunk of the month. Scott Coker said that Fedor wanted Ryan Bader for his retirement fight. It looks like we're finally going to get that more than a year later. Yeah. You mentioned Jake Paul. He would continue to be an antagonist for Dana White and someone that really kind of a proponent for fighters and proponent for his own stuff, whatever you think of him. But their beef continued, and Scott Coker said, of course, he'd love to have Jake Paul fight in Bellator. Why wouldn't he, right? Mark Hunt was ordered to pay the UFC $388,000 stemming from that long-ranging lawsuit. And, of course, he challenged Dana White and the Fertittas to a fight because he's Mark Hunt, so why not? Bellator said they were working on a Chris Cyborg, a Kat Zingano title fight. Dustin Poirier agreed to a super short notice Nate Diaz fight, except no, the UFC said that's not happening. So kind of one of those fights that gets made on social, it just never happens, especially with the Diaz brothers. BKFC booked, obviously, former UFC fighter Mike Perry and former UFC fighter Julian Lane. Chad Mendez also was set to make his debut. He revealed later in an interview he still has three fights with the UFC left on his deal, which I thought was odd because I thought he was outright released. But I don't know, maybe they're just holding on to an option or something like that. Future fights. UFC 271 getting Derek Lewis versus Tai Tuivasa. UFC 272, this was funny, got Alexander Volkanovski defending the featherweight title against Max Holloway for a third time. And then Aljamain Sterling versus Peter Yan, too. A couple days later, Holloway said he was injured, and then he was out. Just like days later, after they announced this double main event card. Of course, Henry Cejudo offered to step in, as he has for so long, and just never happens. And then a couple days later, a Korean Zombie was put in place instead, and the fight was made for UFC 273, the title fight, that is. And then Jorge Masvidal versus Colby Covington was made as a new headliner for UFC 272. So a lot of card shuffling there. We're going to talk about Covington and Masvidal in just a few minutes. UFC announced that the pay-per-view prices were being increased by ESPN to $74.99. UFC February fight night got Rafael Dos Anjos versus Rafael Fiziev for their main event. Jacare Souza, of course, boxing, playing for his boxing debut. And then Lil Nog, announced he was going to return to boxing. He would later win against a former UFC veteran, someone that I was not familiar with. Misha Tate said she was going to make her flyweight debut against Lauren Murphy. That would happen at UFC 276. Former flyweight champion Jessica Andrade, or strawweight champion or flyweight champion Andrade? I'm trying to remember.
I don't think she ever had either belt, did she?
Didn't she? Yes, because she didn't she fight Rose and then Rose beat her? I'm completely blanking.
I'm just going to check, but I don't think so. I think she challenged, but I don't think she ever won. I could be wrong. I'll look it up.
Yeah.
While you go on, and I'll let you know.
So she announced she was returning to 115. Yeah, so she must have been at as strawweight if she returned to 115.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, she beat Rose. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, and then she lost to Whaley.
Yes, that's what it was. No worries. Conor McGregor, his bar was hit with Molotov cocktails and pipe bombs. Dana White said that Leon Edwards 100% was next for Kamaru Usman. UFC Vegas 46 results, rather. Calvin Kattar defeating Giga Chikadze by unanimous decision in the main event there. Gunnar Nelson, I completely forgot he was still in the UFC because I remember he got a new UFC deal. He was just one of those guys. I remember he came in. Everyone's like, it's the Icelandic GSP or something like that, right? There was this huge buzz. And he's had some good fights, but never really kind of got over to that level, I think, that they planned. But anyway, he signed a new UFC deal. MVP versus Yaroslav Amosov title fight. That was set for the Bellator London show that was coming up. Amanda Nunes said she was leaving AT&T to start her own gym. UFC changed and updated their COVID protocols for vax fighters. Again, this is January 2022, so a lot of things have changed since then. And then UFC's Carlos Felipe was suspended 18 months for a failed USADA drug test. Thoughts about any of that?
All right. So, yeah, the one thing I'd forgotten about was the UFC pay-per-view price increasing. And, you know, this seems to happen every year. And I wonder maybe if, you know, this one was maybe just one too many, and that could be a reason for the declining, you know, buys this year. I don't know. I know for us in Canada, I don't think it changed. I think we're paying 60 mm-hmm. and that's 60 Canadian. So, you know, it's like 45 American. But yeah, $75 for some of these pay-per-views is a little much. The McGregor story, I remember that, you know, kind of being a thing and, you know, wondering, you know, is that, you know, what would have caused that? Was it just kind of a rando thing or what? But yeah, didn't really hear much about it. That Calvin Kattar Jiga Chikadze fight was like an early contender for fight of the year, and we get many of them. So it was kind of cool to see. Amanda Nunes leaving the ATT to start her own gym. I think that was supposed to basically lay the groundwork for a potential fight with Kayla Harrison because they're both in the same team or were in the same team because she's an ATT fighter, right, with, you know, with Dan Lambert. And so, but that obviously never materialized because Kayla is still in PFL and now she's lost. So that fight looks a lot less appealing. And yeah, the last kind of vestiges of COVID with, you know, the vaxxed fighter requirement. I mean, you know, when we did the show last year, it was all about COVID still. And now it's like, I barely even remember it. You know what I mean? Yeah, like UFC, it's just like, I don't know when we stopped caring about COVID, but at some point after this and before now, you know, it's just, you'd never hear about it anymore. So I'm sure people are still getting it in UFC. I'm just talking specifically UFC. I know it's a big deal in the world and everything like that, but you never hear about it in UFC anymore, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure if people are pulling out of fights, probably sometimes it's COVID, but we're just, it's not a thing anymore. It's just,
compared to when we did this in 2021, and we were talking about, I mean, every month it was just, you know, it's basically a giant chessboard of stuff getting, you know, swapped around and everything like that. And, you know, go through again, these first 3 months, there's like one instance of it, but that's like about it in terms of it being like really affecting like a big fight or something like that. Again, it could be a case of not disclosing it, but at this point it's kind of like, you know, most people are over it pretty quick. It's not really affecting too much.
I think most of the time now it's like, if you get it, you just stay home until you're not sick anymore. And in some cases days. It's 2 or 3 days. Yep. Sometimes it's 2 weeks, you know, it varies on the person. So, and which is a good thing, you know? But it would just, I was surprised actually even to hear that was still going on in 2022, I guess.
I know.
It's been a long year.
Certainly has been. Let's go over the rest of the month. UFC announced they're heading to London themselves in March. Tom Aspinall, I believe this would have been their first show in London since the pandemic. Yeah. Tom Aspinall versus Alexander Volkov is announced as a headliner. Dan Hooker returning to 145 pounds to take on the very popular Arnold Allen, at least popular over there. Michael Falco, this is a guy I remember fighting a long time ago in UFC, and he fought, might have been Bellator or Strikeforce, or he's just kind of one of those guys, never was a star, but I remember his name was pronounced dead after getting stabbed in his hometown. Separate story, Damian Maia was telling a story about he was stabbed in a Swedish bar brawl, so that was pretty crazy. UFC's 274 got some fights. Glover Teixeira versus Jiří Procházka was targeted for that show, and also Charles Oliveira versus Justin Gaethje. Talking about pay-per-view buy reveals, they announced that UFC 269, which would have been in, December, did 500,000 buys. PFL signed a multi-year extension with ESPN. Jeremy Stevens, a little evil, a little heathen, whatever, announced he was, or UFC released him after 15 years, and an interesting history with him. I think anyone that kind of came up through the tough boom era certainly remembers Jeremy Stevens, or remember the arrest in Iowa, and he was set to fight, and Dana essentially went to Iowa and bailed him out, and that whole story, and a lot of fun fights, a lot of, you know, weird kind of stuff, but done with it for UFC after 15 years. Juliana Pena and Amanda Nunes were front runners to coach Tough. Jan Blachowicz and Alexander Rakic was off the UFC Columbus main event. Chael Sonnen charges were dismissed from a Las Vegas hotel case in a very strange situation. However, there was a twist coming, which we'll talk about in just a couple months in March. Misha Tate, we just talked about her, announced she was joining the cast of Celebrity Big Brother. Rashad Evans got his first win in 8 years, and Sergey Kharitonov delivered a TKO win over Tyrone Spong at Eagle FC 44. Donald Cerrone and Joe Lauzon, one of those crossroads old guy fights that I love, was set for an April fight night. However, it was later pushed back to UFC 274. At Bellator 273, heavyweight champion Ryan Bader decision Valentin Moldavsky to get a win there. And it was announced, I believe, that same night, if not the next day, that Bellator announced they were returning to France and that Bader would defend his title against Czech Congo in a rematch of a headline. It's something that we just needed to see in our lives. And then finally, Benson Henderson said he was going to be entering free agency after his he had just picked up a Bellator win as well. Thoughts on any of that?
I got some good Bellator news there. Know, yeah, right? that first Bader Congo fight, I watched it, and man, that was not fun. I guess it was like, it was like a no contest. Congo kind of bailed out after he was kind of just doing nothing for the first 5 minutes, and the second fight was not much better. Benson, I think he ended up re-signing with Bellator, so that was, it was interesting. I don't think UFC would have been interested in bringing him back. The Eagle FC 44, that of course is Khabib's promotion, and this was their US debut, and there was actually a lot of buzz around this. I think it came on a weekend when there might not have been any UFC, so it was like a lot of people watched it that might not normally have, and it was available for free. So and the main event was Sergey Karatanov was a late replacement for Bigfoot Silva, if you remember. So a lot of people were like wondering, oh my God, like Bigfoot's going to fight again. But yep, turned out it was Karatanov, and he fought the Tyrone Spong, who, former World Series of Fighting dude. Rashad, I wonder if that was one and done because he hasn't fought since. And, when you see him on the UFC broadcast, it doesn't really look like it. But there's a lot of former UFC fighters on that card. Ray Borg, John Howard, Anthony Njikiwani, Mike Hunzinger, Sean Bunch. So, it seems like they might be like a feeder or like an old timers league. I'm not sure. Maybe some sort of mixture, hybrid, but yep. They had a few good shows in there. To keep up the non-UFC theme on these notes, PFL signing a multi-year extension with ESPN was interesting because they actually got several shows on the main ESPN network this year. None of them did any kind of numbers. They did a pay-per-view at the end of the year that I can't imagine anybody bought, but they're still on there, and there were no financial terms announced, which usually means they're probably not getting any money, but it's exposure and maybe some sort of revenue share or something like that. But they're much more visible than Bellator. I'm not sure, to call them number two or number three is probably irrelevant because they're so far behind number one. But they are definitely, like, I think for fighters that are looking to come up, you're probably better off going to PFL than Bellator at this point because they have the $1 million tournaments, plus you're on ESPN. And Bellator is like on Showtime, on Friday nights, and 100,000 people are watching. Like it barely exists.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that more as the year goes on.
Yeah. It's an interesting debate. I hadn't really thought about who is number two. And I think so many people just as a default say Bellator, but I think you make some, a compelling argument for why PFL, might be number two.
And even one is on Amazon Prime now. And with the NFL being on Amazon Prime, like I think they may have more visibility, going forward. We haven't really got numbers or anything, but I heard a lot of buzz on the one shows, late in the year. So something to keep an eye on.
All right, let's go to February then. And so February, 456 headlines for this one, UFC 271. And this was, I completely forgot about this, Joe Rogan controversy. So this was controversy about stuff he had said in his podcast related to obviously, COVID, vaccines. There was a use of the N-word in previous podcasts he had done that were scrubbed from Spotify. There was all this like controversy, all this stuff. And then leading in UFC 271, he said he was out of the event due to what he called a scheduling conflict. However, after the show, Dana White said that there was no scheduling conflict. That's bullshit. So I don't know if he ever explained why he didn't show up or whatever. But Joe Rogan was not on that show. It was headlined by Israel Adesanya defending the middleweight title against old foe Robert Whittaker via unanimous decision. It wasn't really like an outstanding, like super exciting fight or anything like that. I remember that was kind of one of the narratives afterward. However, what was exciting was Tua Tuivasa. The fight was just made in January. We just talked about it. Knocking out Derek Lewis with a standing elbow. Lewis did the flare flop Yeah, that was obviously a notable knockout again. Tai Tuivasa, I think we talked about him last year, but a guy that's kind of just, you know, in that mix of just kind of waiting to get the next, you know, next big push, and that was obviously a good start to his year. Roxanne Modafferi, longtime MMA fighter, she had made her retirement at the show with the loss. Jared Cannonier on his way to what would be an eventual title shot, knocking out Derek Brunson. And then Brunson also hinted at retirement as well. So, yeah, this was kind of really just setting up the middleweight division. There's a Joe Rogan controversy, obviously Tai Tuivasa knockout. So it wasn't a, you know, star-studded show. But, again, there's this narrative about Adesanya just that he was not as exciting as he once was. And I think there's a couple reasons for that in thinking through this and hearing other people talk on and so on, is that, you know, once you get that title, there's a real desire, obviously, to keep it. And you don't have to go balls out in the first round and try to get knockouts. And you're not trying to keep your job. You're not trying to get a job. You're just trying to keep what you have. And you also are smarter and know not to be in harm's way. And obviously, he's defensively very good. And he knows what, you know, he doesn't need to. There's this trade-off of winning versus the style of winning. And I found this was a start to a very interesting year for him in that respect. And obviously he would have a very big notable fight in November. We'll talk about in a couple episodes, but it was a very interesting year for Adesanya. And I think the narrative of him kind of starting to be a boring fighter, you could see him start to defend that in interviews. I thought was pretty interesting, but thoughts about UFC 271 and all that.
Yeah, I mean, everything you said is true. I think with Adesanya, like he fights to his opponents. So with Whitaker, you know, his path to victory was going to be, you know, not engaging with him and keep it on the outside and using his defense and then just trying to strike from distance. And, you know, in the first fight, he was able to tag him and knocked him out. And, you know, obviously that was, he's always trying to do that, but he's not going to rush him and get inside of him to where Whitaker, because Whitaker's got, you know, really a lot of power. And he's also got great wrestling. So, you know, the idea is to try to keep on the outside of him. So it's the number one and the number two guy in the world. So you always want to see that, but it doesn't necessarily always make for the most visually appealing fight. Right. But you know, and then that, you know, that strategy, you know, ended up costing him the title later in the year. You know, doing the same thing against Alex Pereira. Where, you know, like he tried the same strategy and it worked for, you know, 20 plus minutes and then it didn't. So in this case, yeah, Whitaker just was never able to implement his game plan. Tai Tuivasa in the co-main event against Derek Lewis, a star was born there. I mean, this is a big pay-per-view, you know, probably one of the bigger ones of the year, although we don't necessarily know. With Tai doing the shoey, and he did like a bunch of them. I remember on the way back to the ring, he just kept getting stopped and handed beers. And at that point it was like, okay, this guy can never wrestle fight at the Apex again. And this is something we talked about this. I don't know if it was last year or the year before. And I think you had brought up the fact that, you know, you thought going forward, we were going to see a mixture of, you know, them being on the road and them staying at the Apex because it made economic sense and all that, you know, and, you know, they spent a lot of money going on the road. And then I heard from people that said, no way, you know, you guys are nuts. They're going to be back on the road as soon as they can, because, you know, there's a lot of money out there and they're doing great gates. They have awesome crowds. They have yet to have an unsold ticket, you know, since the pandemic for any of their shows. They still are going back to the Apex. They just released their 2023 schedule and three of the shows in the first 3 months are at the Apex. So I think there's other reasons that we're probably never going to hear publicly about why they're at the Apex. And because certainly money isn't the issue. They're making money hand over fist. They're selling out all these arenas. So there's other reasons, but guys like Tai Tuivasa and there's a few others, they just feed off the crowds and they have to be in front of a crowd. Yeah. And the other one I want, Modafferi, that was sad for me personally. She was always one of my favorite fighters going back to tough, I want to say 20, or 18 maybe, where Ronda Rousey and Misha Tate were the coaches. And I just remember falling in platonic love with her, you know, watching her cry under the deck while, you know, she says, "I'm the happy warrior, and but I'm crying," and all, I just, my heart broke. And I was like, I was pulling for her the whole time. I'm a mark right in, you know. and I saw her get some big wins. I remember one she had against Antonina Shevchenko, big upset in Russia. And you know, and so every time she got one of those big wins, I was really happy. But she had a great career, and a lot of longtime veterans retired this year.
Yeah,
a bit of a changing of the guard.
Yeah. She was I just think of her as not being cool and being completely fine with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
she,
like a nerd, you know?
Yeah. And she had the glasses. She in her fight gear.
What was the word? Do you remember what Dave used to say about Bailey?
Oh,
attainable.
Like it was, he said, I remember him referring to her as like an aunt. Like she looks like an aunt, yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I've met her in person. She's just the nicest person in the world too.
But even just the fight garb, right? She had the two knee braces, yeah, I believe. She had two ankle wraps. It was almost like a full rash guard and everything like that. But yeah, she was the happy warrior and people loved the shit out of her. Like Josh Barnett,
so well spoken. She worked in Japan as an English, yes, language translator, yeah, and stuff. And I remember when I would hear her do interviews sometimes, and she reminded me of Kenny Omega, the way that they would like articulate their words, because I would think it was almost like they're going like English to Japanese back to English. And so they're very thoughtful in the way they speak. And so they have kind of the same cadence when they're talking.
Interesting.
I heard Kenny being interviewed by Dave and Garrett, and I remember thinking he sounds like Roxanne. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And they're both, yeah, English people that spent a lot of time in Japan. So,
well, let's go over this first chunk of things that happened in February. The aforementioned Davison Figueiredo said he won $1 million for the fourth Moreno fight. And initially it's kind of like, well, he's asking for a lot, but really it's not, you know, I mean, professional fighters and at that level. So yeah, I thought that was kind of a funny headline there. Paul Daly said he wanted to retire with his next fight and he would later get it, getting Andrei Koroshkov at Bellator London. We'll talk more about that next episode. Henry Cejudo was back in the USADA pool. Still have not seen a fight yet. Alexander Gustafsson back at heavyweight and fighting Ben Rothwell. However, in March, Ben Rothwell was cut. So Alexander Gustafsson needing an opponent there. We'll talk more about Gustafsson in a minute. Holly Holm versus Ketlin Vieira was set for a fight night main event in May. Arizona joined Nevada and Florida as states are not going to release their fighter payouts. Kind of a bummer there. For more information that's out there, the better, so other fighters can get paid. So the more states that do this,
yeah,
definitely hurts the fighters. No plans to fight for Megan Anderson. Remember, she was a UFC women's featherweight. And seems to be happy doing other things, making other money, so good for her. Paul Costa said he was interested in boxing, of course, after his UFC deal was up. UFC Vegas 47 results. Sean Strickland picking up a split decision win over Jack Hermanson. And that was Strickland, obviously, very, I would not say well-spoken. He speaks, that's for sure. And really just not someone I'd love to hang out with, put it that way. But he would get his a little bit later in the year. We'll talk more about that. Chris Lieben, former UFC vet, was hospitalized for post-COVID respiratory issues. AJ McKee versus Patricio Pitbull, their 145-pound Bellator championship rematch was set, as well as Vadim Nemkov versus Corey Anderson for the light heavyweight title. Those fights were set for April's Bellator 277. Kamaru Usman versus Leon Edwards too, indeed, was targeted for July. Curtis Blaydes versus Chris Daukaus, targeted for the UFC March Fight Night main event. The aforementioned Israel Adesanya signed a new multi-fight deal. This is leading into the fight, the UFC fight we just talked about. He said he was one of the top paid athletes in MMA and that he definitely, quote unquote, will compete in WWE before he retires. All right. UFC released 11 fighters. None of them really any names, at least to me. Luis Pena booked his first fight since the domestic violence arrest and his UFC release. And then the aforementioned Rafael Dos Anjos Fiziev fight was moved to UFC 272, or the fight was later canceled because Fiziev got coronavirus or got COVID. And then Johnny Walker versus Jamal Hill was now the Fight Night 47 main event. Thoughts on any of that?
The UFC releasing fighters, that you know, that's happening a lot. Basically, if you're a guy, if you're a guy or a girl that's been around for a while and is now a 500 fighter, but you're making more than the 10 and 10 minimum, you're probably going to get let go. Just kind of the economics, they're kind of running it kind of like, you know, regular sports in a way, with the analytics and stuff. I was surprised when I saw the stuff about Israel Adesanya and WWE. Just never really struck me as the kind of guy that would be suitable for that. But my In the Clinch podcast partner, Ryan Frederick, was at the UFC event in Houston, and he was sitting beside Booker T at the post-fight press conference, and Israel Adesanya saw Booker T, and he's like, "Is that Booker T?" And he was like super excited. Like, so he was obviously a really big fan. And of course, later in the year, we would see him do a Undertaker entrance. Yes. For, I think it was, yeah, for the, Cannoneer fight.
Yes.
With Vince McMahon in the crowd. Other than that, not much else there, you know, just kind of a lot of stuff. Cejudo being back in the Estrada pool, you mentioned, and we haven't seen a fight. I think we're close. You know, I've seen some rumblings that, you know, he may be getting the next bantamweight title shot, and then the winner would fight, Sugar Sean O'Malley, later on in the year. So, that could get announced soon.
So I mentioned Alexander Gustafsson. What I was, when I was typing these out, what a weird career the past couple of years, right? Because he was at this, you know, the upper tier of light heavyweights. He had the awesome fights with Jon Jones and was just really in that mix of kind of the, you know, he's almost like the Triple H to The Rock and the Triple H to Jones's Steve Austin and Daniel Cormier's The Rock or whatever, what, you know, whatever you want to say. He was good, but he wasn't at that level, still regarded. He retires and comes back as a heavyweight and really hasn't got any momentum going. He just, I put this in here and I'm just like, he's still, you know, he's still at it, but just not really making any progress at all. And it was just kind of a
he was supposed to fight this weekend. And, you know, he pulled out of the fight with OSP. He got knocked out in his last fight. And I honestly thought, like, he was knocked out in a minute seven by Nikita Krylov, who is, you know, he's not a contender, nothing like that. And I figured, you know what, that's it for him. Like, he had lost four out of his last five. No, actually, four in a row. I'm looking at it was a grappling match in there. So he lost four in a row. I kind of want to, at some point, go do some sort of a statistical study on the records of people after they fight Jon Jones. It feels like they're not very good afterwards. You know, Jon Jones is, it's, you know, breaking news. He's a really good fighter. And I think he, you know, it takes a lot out of people after they fight him because, you know, it's especially Gustafsson. Because, yeah, he was never the same fighter. I mean, he hasn't won since the second time he fought Jones. You know, and I would be surprised if we saw him again. What was that old expression? He's done, Gus. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought that was the case with Gustafsson. And I kind of, in a way, don't even really want to see guys like that, you know, that used to be so good. And they're just coming out there and they get knocked out. And you just, it's sad to watch. And yeah. I kind of almost just would rather not even see them if that's all we're going to see.
Yep. Go over the rest of February. Beneil Dariush was injured and had to pull out of his Vegas 49 fight night headliner against Islam Makhachev. Bobby Green stepped in instead. We'll talk about that result in just a minute. Mike Swick diagnosed with cancer. Lyoto Machida's last Bellator contracted fight was booked for May. Speaking of guys still just hanging around, doing their thing in Bellator. UFC Vegas 48 results. Jamal Hill, one-punch knockout of Johnny Walker. Jim Miller gets another victory, and he wanted Donald Cerrone or Joe Lauzon for his record 40th fight. We'll talk about that later in the series. Bellator 274 results. Logan Storley picking up a decision win over Neiman Gracie. We'll talk about why that is important in just a minute. Chad Mendes rolled in his bare-knuckle fighting debut, and then Mike Perry won a very bloody fight over Julian Lane. John Jones' fiance finally left him. Years too late, I would say. Gegard Mousasi picked up a quick TKO win over Mr. PVZ, Austin Vanderfort, at Bellator 275. Shogun Hua returned for or is announced to be returning for a UFC 274 rematch with the man you just mentioned, Ovince St. Preux. Vegas, UFC Vegas 49 fight night results. Islam Makhachev picking up a quick first round knockout TKO win over Bobby Green on his path to a big win later in the year. We'll talk about Gilbert Burns versus Khamzat Chimaev was targeted for UFC 273. And then the aforementioned Glover Teixeira versus Jiří Procházka fight was pushed back from UFC 274 to UFC 275. Anything that stand out to you?
Bobby Green, that he took that fight against Islam Makhachev on short notice, basically had nothing to lose. I believe his first UFC main event. The result went predictably and on the way to, Makhachev, spoiler alert, winning the lightweight title later in the year. Austin Vanderford, I think when that fight with Jaygard Musasi was made, everyone that follows MMA said way, way, way too soon. And it turned out to be that way. And then he would go on to have another loss later in the year. Hopefully we talk about that later because it ended up leading to something. For me, I got to interview the guy that beat Austin. So that was cool. You're bringing up bare knuckle fighting. And it's funny because it feels like in previous years, I was paying a little bit more attention to bare knuckle fighting than I did this year. I don't exactly know why that's the case, but they just seem to be falling off the radar a little bit. And these fights are still happening, but I'm not exactly sure like who's buying these pay-per-views or how they're paying their fighters, but they keep fighting. And it's like, you can tell the guys when they get cut from UFC, it's like, okay, that guy's going to go in bare knuckle fighting. And every time they do, like there's a certain type, and Mike Perry is like the poster boy. And then the other one with Jim Miller just keeps rolling along. And I think it was around this time that he started talking about UFC 300. And Dana White would later on say, if he's still fighting, he's going to be on UFC 300, which is actually like not that far away, like 18 months. I mean, because we're doing 282 this weekend. So I think he'll be there and he'll be on the card. And he's still, he's not going to be a title contender, but he can beat most guys in the division. He's probably just outside the top 15 and fun guy to watch. And it was really cool to see this.
That's right. And finally, we'll flip to March. And again, I mentioned earlier the Colby Covington, Jorge Masvidal fight that was made in January, leading up to this, obviously the new headliner for 272. This was one-sided, to say the least. Colby Covington dominated Jorge Masvidal in the main event of UFC 272. Obviously, blood rivals from all the issues in ATT and just this had been building and building and building and finally got it. And then Covington picking up a dominant win. Rafael Dos Anjos defeating Renato Moicano, short notice fill in there for Fiziev, defeating via unanimous decision. And this was a five-round co-main event. I completely forgot that was a five-rounder. Continuing a trend of UFC kind of doing that, but usually, for the Diaz brothers or something like that, not necessarily for a guy like RDA. Bryce Mitchell dominated Edson Barboza. I threw that in there because obviously Edson Barboza is another guy that kind of coming near the end. Kevin Holland picking up a big TKO win over Cowboy Oliveira. And then Sergey Spivak had a big TKO win over Greg Hardy. Notable because that would be Greg Hardy's last fight in the UFC, his third straight knockout defeat. Later, Colby Covington claimed he had turned down pay-per-view points because he really wanted this Masvidal fight. Bryce Mitchell, again, I include him because he earmarked half his fight purse. So it was around $45,000 to charity. Dana White stepped in and said, I'll just donate it for you so you don't have to do that. So that was good of him. Again, I mentioned about Greg Hardy done after three straight knockout losses. Before this, again, very similar to Israel Adesanya, Masvidal announced he had signed a new deal, claimed that he was one of the top three highest paid fighters in the company. And then weeks later, this I remember doing this story for the website, a report came out that Jorge Masvidal attacked Colby Covington outside a restaurant, which turned out to be true. Covington filed charges, claiming $15,000 worth of damages to his Rolex. Masvidal pleaded not guilty. We'll kind of talk more about this in future episodes, but essentially how the report went is that Covington was inside the restaurant. There was some shouting or whatever, and then it came outside and I think Masvidal had a hood on and it came up from behind him, essentially sucker punched him from behind, broke one of his teeth or a couple of his teeth, and it was just it was just kind of one of those one of those situations where I remember also Jorge Masvidal going on Twitter and posting, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but essentially kind of alluding to the fact that something happened. So there was no doubt that this happened. And then he was, you know, tweeting about it and claimed that Covington had said stuff about his kids. And this was just obviously a pretty ugly situation. And it didn't, you know, you have, there wasn't the rallying around Masvidal that I thought there might be, because obviously he's the more popular of the two, because I think this came after the dominant Covington win. And I think, you know, a lot, it seems some of the fighter sentiment or whatever is kind of like, well, you had your chance to, you had your chance to take it out on in the cage, but you're doing it kind of in the sucker punch way. And it just, I would say he lost street cred for it, but it was kind of just one of those situations where I don't think he turned out to be the baby face as much as I thought he might be in that situation.
I think people are just, I don't know if they're just tired of the act. And I mean, I'm talking about Covington in that sense, but you know, so in that sense, it's like, you know, but still Masvidal, like it's kind of hard to get behind a guy that, you know, like is going to, you know, kind of attack someone in the street. But I, like you, I kind of figured that there would be more public support for him. And I did see some, you know, on Twitter, you know, the same, you know, like probably is, you know, there's kind of a subset of fans that are, you know, like going to be all, they just would rather see no rules and just these guys beating, you know, beating each other to death kind of thing. But yeah, it's very interesting that we haven't seen either one of these guys since then. You know, and you mentioned Masvidal signing that big contract, and I mean, unless he's getting paid or unless he's fighting, he's not getting paid. So, I at some point we have to see him again, and Covington as well. And it's just really odd that with all these shows that have these fights that aren't really appealing to casual fans, it's been 9 months and we haven't seen, you know, two of the biggest stars in the welterweight division fight again. So, I think Sergey Spivak gained a lot of fans by ending the Greg Hardy experiment. You know, he would go on to have a pretty big year, including just last weekend. He was supposed to fight, you know, a couple weeks ago against Derek Lewis, but didn't fight. But yeah, he had another big knockout later in the year. So I think I was mixing him up with a different guy that got a knockout last week. Some of these heavyweights are
all the Sergeys
keep track of. Yeah. Bryce Mitchell is another one. You mentioned Sean Strickland earlier, and he's another one that doesn't always have the brightest things to say in his interviews, but you know, certainly you can't fault him for what he's, you know, wanting to give his purse to charity. And Dana White going in and saying, you know, forget it, I'll do the donation. That was a really nice moment that happened on the pay-per-view. So you know, it was, oh, and the, I want to mention the five rounder with RDA and Moicano. I think the reason for that was because when the fight was originally made, well, originally supposed to be the two Rafaels, and they were going to be the main event. So Rafael Dos Anjos was training for a five rounder. So that is why this was kept as five rounds, but it was odd. And I think we'd see it once or twice more. And I'd kind of like to see more of these, especially if it's like a number one contenders fight. Yeah. Number one, just because you can see what a guy would be like in five rounds. But number two, if there's a late replacement and somebody has to step in, they've already trained for five rounds. So it's going to be probably a more competitive fight. So
yeah, I would agree with that, especially in there's so many cases where you'll see a fight and it's just two awesome fighters and you're like, you know, they go the distance, but it's like one of those just action packed fights. Like we need more time, and you can kind of telegraph what some of those fights, especially in like the lightweight division. I think, there's definitely room for, and I'm glad they are doing this more often, where if it's something where, especially if it's like a draw of a fight, like people are really interested in it, but you don't want to have a fight night, you want to have it kind of be part of a bigger pay-per-view, but not a main event. You have that option now to make it five rounds. It just, no one ever complains about that. You know, it's just, it's people, they get to see, they know in that 25 minute stretch could be over quick, but at least you're going to, they have the time to settle their issues versus having something be too short between two guys who are essentially championship level, but may not have a title. So with I wanted to clarify in the Covington Masvidal fight. So I think I was conflating part of it with the Mike Perry Hotel or the restaurant altercation from 2021 that we talked about, where he basically beat up some wrestling guy. So Covington, so it was outside of Miami Beach, Florida restaurant. Mazza was charged with felony battery. Covington initially wasn't identified because he invoked Marcy's Law, which gives crime victims meaningful and enforceable constitutional rights equal to the rights of the accused. He'd lost teeth. There was a video that was posted by TMZ of Covington outside the restaurant afterward. He was there with some social media personality and having dinner. And I think when he came outside, that was when shit went down again. It was
Wasn't the story too was that Covington had basically was trash talking him in the restaurant and then essentially challenged him to come outside.
Yes.
And Masvidal did.
Yes.
And so, you know, and I don't think Covington was actually expecting him to.
Yep.
So that, you know, it's kind of like he brought it on himself, but then Masvidal should know better than to get into a brawl in the streets. So I think maybe that's also part of the reason. And, you know, and we're going to talk about people getting behind people that commit crimes very shortly. So a bit of a theme in March.
That's right. Masvidal said it was a show your face challenge. And then the next morning, I remember this. Masvidal said, good morning to everyone except those that think talking about someone's kids is cool. That was at 9 a.m. on March 22nd. So, yeah, that was kind of some of the stuff there. So, yeah, hopefully we'll see both of them some point. I assume we will. But, yeah, we'll get to the rest of the month here. Let's see. Cain Velasquez was arrested for alleged shooting and attempted murder following a car chase. His bail was denied. This was obviously a crazy story because you don't expect Cain Velasquez to be arrested for attempted murder. Obviously, a lot has changed since then, including him getting back in the pro wrestling ring, getting his bail, $1 million bail, obviously with a lot of restrictions, and we'll talk about that later on in the year. But this, I remember, this came out. That was a crazy story, again, and kind of get some of the details on it about the alleged sexual assault of a relative's child, and then also his own child was allegedly assaulted by this person who ran a daycare. So pretty crazy story about that. So we'll talk more about that later on in the year. Dana White revealed a conversation he had back after the GSP Johnny Hendricks fight when with the Nevada governor, and Dana went off on basically, you know, not wanting to even be if I have fights or questioning fights and having them in Nevada. There's a whole thing on that. So he's telling Pat McAfee in an interview about Nevada governor essentially telling him to shut the F up and he might get his license pulled if he talks again. And Dana actually stood down. So that was a rare case of that. Obviously, we just talked about the RDA Moicano fight that was made the new co-main event, and that it was learned that Islam Makhachev actually turned down a fight against RDA, which RDA was not happy with there. UFC women's flyweight champion Valentina Shevchenko was set for her return to the cage against defending against Talia Santo. Initially, that was targeted for UFC 275. Dana said he'd be shocked if Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz, the trilogy, didn't happen. Khabib was announced to be heading to the UFC Hall of Fame. Brock Lesnar said he was done fighting with UFC because he was, quote unquote, too old. Kayla Harrison, we talked about her a few minutes ago, says she was back with the PFL after Bellator matched their offer, and she claimed that she was the highest paid female fighter ever. I think Ronda Rousey might have a issue or two about that. Dana said he was confident as ever that Francis Ngannou, they would make a deal with him, and that Ngannou revealed he had knee surgery set. Bellator announced they're going to be returning to Hawaii with two title fights. UFC 274 got Michael Chandler versus Tony Ferguson and Rose Namajunas versus Carla Esparza 2 as the co-main event. Talking about Eagle FC, JDS, Junior Dos Santos, Thiago Silva, and Hector Lombard signing deals there. Paige VanZant, we talked about her earlier, announced she was signing with AEW. Rob Font versus Chito Vera was set for a April main event for fight night there. UFC 275 got Robert Whittaker versus Marvin Vittori. John Lineker knocked out Bibio Fernandez to win the one bantamweight title. Kevin Eagle FC again. Kevin Lee defeating Diego Sanchez. That's a fight at Eagle FC 46. UFC Vegas 50. Magomed Ankalaev picked up a decision win over Thiago Santos. Song Yadong had a big knockout over a former title challenger Malam Marish. And then Alex Pereira, someone we'll talk about more obviously later in the year, picking up a decision win over Bruno Silva. Kevin Holland subdued a gunman at a Houston restaurant. And then Dana White claimed that he received a death threat from a UFC pirate that he shut down. We'll stop there and say thoughts on any of that.
Busy month. I guess it's like the main thing. Well, I'll talk about the main thing last. Kayla, you know, I guess maybe with the $1 million, you know, prizes that she was winning every year, not this year, maybe, you know, without pay-per-view bonuses, perhaps she might be the highest paid. I don't know. It's hard to say. I remember Chris Cyborg saying the same thing. Yeah. I was surprised that Brock Lesnar closed the UFC door because he tends to like to always play them off against WWE to get more money from WWE. But maybe he's looking at AEW now as that alternative. And, you know, and then or he just threatens to walk and they just throw money at him, like what happened in July. But the obviously the big story and really one of the biggest stories of the year was that Cain Velasquez thing. And I just remember, like, you know, I'm a parent. I have six kids. And, you know, like, I know that if something like that happened with me, like, I would want to do what Cain did. But I, you know, I just know that I can't. And so I was surprised that so many people were behind him. And I do realize, like, obviously the alleged perpetrator, you know, should have been arrested. And, you know, and that person had no, you know, they were released with no bail. And meanwhile, Cain was arrested and not given bail. So I think people looked at that as being unfair. But I'm just, you know, like, you can't just get in a high speed chase and start firing guns at people in public. So it was really torn there, you know, and nobody, like, I don't want to see somebody go to jail for the rest of their life for kind of losing their mind over something that happened to a family member. But I just, you know, he's going to pay a punishment. I was surprised that they let him go to pro wrestling, but, you know, I guess, you know, again, I don't know all the details of the case, and the judge obviously considered everything and allowed it. And a lot of people seem happy about it. So I kind of find that, you know, it's hard to, like, criticize him when people think that you're trying to defend the other person, and I'm not, you know, there's no defense.
It's
if that person did what
it's
they were accused of doing. Yeah, yeah. Very complicated. But again, you know, I guess they're kind of putting their foot down and saying, you know, like, vigilante justice is not going to be allowed in San Jose. Mm. But yeah. And one thing too, I just kind of hit me as you mentioned some of these fight night main events. Like, I don't know about you, but sometimes when they announce these, like, I'm way more excited for some of these fight night main events than I am, like, actually for the pay-per-view main events. Hmm. In some cases, like Rob Font and Chito Vera, like, yes. I remember just being very excited, you know, and we talked about the Rafael Dos Anjos and Rafael Fiziev and, you know, and fights like that. Like, they just sound, they're so much more fun. And meanwhile, like, these, you know, pay-per-view main events like that we're getting this weekend, Blachowicz and Makhachev, it's just like, ugh. But you know, like, yeah. but so, you know, and then we just saw that awesome Stephen Thompson Kevin Holland fight last weekend. So, like, it's weird, you know, that the free shows in some cases, and we even get that in pro wrestling in some cases. Yeah, you know, getting that this week too. Yeah, so I just thought that was interesting as you'll go through and name some of these fights that are getting made. I find myself a lot of times more excited for fight night than I am for a pay per view. Hmm.
All right, let's go over this second half here. Busy March. Big surprise, 2021 was revealed as the UFC's best financial year ever, and they chose not to comment when asked about fighter pay being a part of that. Dana White teased an interim heavyweight title fight for Jon Jones, as he was saying, essentially, he said that he was doing an interview where he said there was two fights he wanted to make, which was on his wish list for the year. Jon Jones returning for a heavyweight title, and the other was Leon Edwards getting his shot at Kamaru Usman. So those were the two he wanted. It's kind of strange finish picks there. Anyway, you think, like, a Conor McGregor Diaz fight would be, like, you know, on his wish list or something like that, but who knows. UFC London results, Tom Aspinall submitting Alexander Volkov. Pick up the win there. Paddy Pimblett, he would be newsworthy throughout the year, defeating Kazula Vargas. And then Arnold Allen picking up a standing first round TKO win over Dan Hooker. And then Paul Craig picking up a win over the aforementioned Nikita Krylov. Molly Meatball McCann won a fight as well. She had an interesting year just because, again, the basically getting adopted by Barstool and Dave Portnoy and kind of making her into a much bigger star in a lot of ways, or at least more notable. Dana White was asked about Daniel Cormier taking over the UFC when he was done. He said he has someone in mind to take over the UFC. No one knows who this person is, in that nobody would be able to identify who this person is because it's a nobody, I guess, to the fight community. But he has someone in mind when the day that he hands it over. And this will actually be a theme a little bit throughout the year, especially some stuff that came out this past week, and that he may be starting to think more about the end than he was at the beginning of the year. Irish police were ordered to turn over evidence in a Conor McGregor sex assault lawsuit that was still going on. McGregor was arrested and charged with dangerous driving. And there's not a lot of McGregor in this. There was headlines about him, but in this first 3 month stretch, but nothing of substance. It's the same thing. He just goes on social and, like, you know, says, I'm going to fight this person. I'm going to fight this person. I'm going to do this. And then nothing ever happens with it. There was no fight at all made this year. We still have no idea when he's going to come back. It's kind of one of those things that until UFC announces it, until it's actually signed, I don't know if I ever expect to see him fight.
He's not even in the testing pool right now. So we're at least 6 months away.
Yeah. Yeah. Sergio Pettis was out of the Bellator Grand Prix due to an injury, the Bantamweight Grand Prix, that is. And our interim Bantamweight title fight was made between Juan Archuleta and Javion Stotts. Is that how you pronounce the first name? Do you know?
It might be Raufion.
Something like that. Yeah.
Raufion or Raufion. Yeah.
Big Rafe. Big Rafe.
Stouts is definitely correct.
Got it.
Stotts.
Something like that. Some guy was going to fight Juan Archuleta for the interim Bantamweight title. Deiveson Figueiredo versus Brand Moreno 4 was confirmed. They were thinking about possibly July for that show. And I mentioned earlier about the Chael Sonnen thing. So obviously the charges over the Las Vegas hotel incident that happened in 2021 were dropped. However, the district attorney, if new evidence comes up, he has the right to then essentially recharge someone or bring up new charges, that is. So Sonnen was charged with felony strangulation over that altercation. Again, the DA got new evidence and issued new charges. 11 counts. He was accused of punching a woman and beating up several men in this altercation. However, the felony was later dropped and was changed to 6 misdemeanors instead. And Sonnen claims he has no memory of the altercation. So we'd hear more about that in a year. Yaroslav Amosov was out of the title fight with MVP at Bellator 281 in London due to defending Ukraine. Obviously, the Ukraine-Russia invasion, that was happening the first third of the year. And an interim title fight between MVP and Logan Storley, who I just talked about, he picked up that win and got him into this interim title fight, which we'll talk about, I believe, on the next episode. Paige Van Zandt was set to headline her, set the first BKFC show in London. UFC filed a trademark for the Ultimates Invitational. Nate Diaz again asked for his UFC release. Demetrius Johnson submitted Rotong Jamanganon, I believe. I have no idea. Rotong, we'll say that, in a mixed rules fight at 1X. UFC Columbus results. Kai Kara France picked up a win over a decision win over Askar Askarov. Brian Barberena picked up a win over Matt Brown in a hell of a fight. Curtis Blaze knocking out Chris Daukaus and the headliner there in the second round. And then Alexa Grasso submitting Joanna Wood in the first round, the former Joanna Calderwood in the first round there. UFC 277 gets Sean Strickland versus Alex Pereira. That would be very important for reasons we'll talk about later. Jan Blachowicz versus Alexander Rakic was rescheduled for a May fight night headliner. Bellator 282 got Gegard Mousasi versus Johnny Eblen as a headliner. And then Nevada Supreme Court sided with Dana White on a sex tape extortion case. Essentially, the person who was trying to extort money at Dana White claimed that he had a deal with Dana White to not release the tape in exchange for like $480,000 or something like that, and essentially filed to the highest court in the state, and the court sided with Dana White and said, no, there's just no, go away. So that was the story there. And I guess a local Vegas paper basically when they were reporting on the story said that White had heavy Republican ties and essentially kind of nodded to that as a reason why this, you know, conservative Supreme Court in Nevada decided not to go with it. I have no idea, but I just noted that when looking through this. Thoughts on any of that?
You kind of chuckled with the Mousasi Johnny Eblen fight, and didn't go so well for Mousasi.
Spoilers there. Spoilers. Yeah. I was writing this out, and it's like Johnny Eblen. He sounds like a job guy. You know what I mean?
And that was everyone's reaction when this fight was signed. I mean, it was the same as the Austin Vanderford fight. And then, you know, I guess at some point somebody was going to beat him. I talked in the last little segment about, you know, how the fight nights, you know, sometimes are more exciting than pay-per-views. And I'd almost argue that the two fight night shows that we got well, there might have been more than two, but the two big ones that we got this month might have been more notable than the pay-per-view, because we got UFC London, which was a huge show for UFC. They sold out the O2 Arena, over 17,000 fans, $4.5 million gate. It was the Patty and Molly show, you know, their coming out party, you know, where to the point where, you know, like Arnold Allen in the co-main, you know, got an impressive win, and people are still coming down from the Patty Pimblett fight.
Right.
And then, you know, and then Aspinall getting the submission in the main event kind of brought them all back. And it was just an incredible, incredible show. And, you know, that whole Patty and Molly thing, they would redo it again in July. But yeah, just incredible. And then like a week later, they did Columbus show with Curtis Blaydes and Chris Daukaus in the main event. And everyone kind of looked at that like, Curtis Blaydes and Chris Daukaus, you know, and you're headlining an arena with that. Well, they sold 18,000 tickets, and they had a stateside fight night gate record of $1.9 million that I believe got beaten last weekend by UFC Orlando. And this is actually like, you know, just kind of heated up the talk again about why are you still doing fights at the Apex, you know, when you've got all these fans just starving for live UFC action, you know, and the UFC Columbus show is another good one. I mean, you brought up that Barbarino-Matt Brown fight, Matt Brown in his hometown, and, you know, just a war with Brian Barbarino that could have gone either way. And, you know, a lot of other great fights on that card. And, yeah, I just every time, like, you know, I talk about it on my podcast, you know, like, why are they still doing fights at the Apex? It's just ridiculous, but it is what it is. The Dana White, I think it's the first thing you brought up in this section, bringing up that 2021 was their best financial year ever. And of course he just opened himself up. You know, I think that started up the Jake Paul talk again, you know, about why aren't you paying your fighters? And I mean, why would you even say that, you know, when you got all these guys? I mean, so many names. You talk about Connor and Jorge Masvidal, Colby Covington and John Jones and Francis Ngannou, like all these guys that are just not fighting. And money is a big reason. So, again, this is a big story. And I do believe that come 2023, a lot of these guys are going to start getting paid because they need these buy rates to come back up if they want to get a sweetheart deal from ESPN again in 2025.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, I always wonder how much ESPN is pressuring behind the scenes. And like, especially when, was it last year with the Brock stuff where he was rumored, he wanted to come back, but he won like $15 million or something like that. And UFC was like, no, we're not doing it. That was 2021, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Between WrestleMania and SummerSlam.
Something like that. Yeah. And so, and that story came out and, you know, Dana was refuting it or whatever. But to me, if I'm ESPN, I'm like, oh, I can pay $15 million and you can get Brock back. And obviously that's going to be a huge buy rate. Like, why aren't you doing this? You know, why isn't McGregor fighting? And I know obviously they're happy with the deal, but I just kind of wonder if stuff like that goes on behind the scenes where they're like, look, you know, and maybe this year is the one to do it where they're like, we were at this and now we're at this, and great, the ratings are great and what have, and the brand is hot, but we want to, can we get some of these bigger names to come back and really kind of goose some of this up a little bit, you know?
They almost maybe need to sign some sort of and I brought this up on my show, so maybe like an escalator deal where, you know, like if you hit certain thresholds of pay-per-view buys, UFC gets a bonus. Mm-hmm. So that would be their incentive to sign these big name fighters and to promote the shows better, you know. So maybe like anything over $500,000, UFC is getting, you know, like a dollar a buy, kind of like they give the fighters. It'd probably be a lot more than a dollar a buy, but
I thought that was in play. I thought there was a rev share after a certain amount. No, did we hear that?
If there is, it's possible, but maybe they never hit it. Like all I know is that I remember the break even was like 250,000 buys. So where ESPN was not losing money as long as they hit 250,000 buys, and UFC was making the equivalent of what they would make on a 250,000 buy show by selling to ESPN. So they actually lost money technically in 2021 over what they would have made if they would have kept the pay-per-views in-house. But, you know, they getting that guaranteed money was, you know, obviously more important at the time they signed the deal. Right. So you might be right about that, but it just like we haven't really heard about it. And you would think that if that was the case, that they would be trying to sign these guys a lot more than they are. You know, like a guy like John Jones, I remember the controversy, him saying that he's worth $25 million a fight, and he probably is, but UFC has no incentive to pay him $25 million a fight because they can headline a show with Islam, with Makhachev and Blachowicz, and they make the same money as John Jones and Francis Ngannou.
I remember when that seeing that Columbus.
I'm going to ask about that though. Sorry.
Yeah. I remember seeing that Columbus gate, and I was like, that stood out to me as, I mean, again, and this is there was a fight. It was a fight that was really supposed to take place. I think what you just talked about, it ended up getting scrapped. And it was again, cursed blades, but still they made, not every ticket was sold before that. I mean, they still were selling tickets up, you know, obviously to that show. And that's when it stood out to me, like the brand, it's crazy. I've said this before that I think there are less crossover stars than before, but the brand has never been hotter and they've never made more money. It's crazy how it's like you mentioned, there's so much pent up demand still. And now we're kind of a cycle through the pandemic, but there go. And you mentioned Orlando. It's like, it is, they're firing when they go out, they sell out. And it's, but it's wild. That Columbus one really stood out to me because there was nothing special on that show. And it's not like, I don't know if it was during the, was it during the Arnold Classic weekend? Is that still a thing?
It was around the same time, but I don't think it was the same weekend. Yeah. So it was within like a week or two of it. They've always done well in Columbus, but obviously this was a record for a fight night. And they still haven't been to Canada. So, I mean, we have, you know, like markets here that have never had UFC. We've had Toronto, Vancouver that are traditionally good markets that haven't had a show in at least 3 years. So, you know, they're opening up. They're doing a show in South Korea. They're going back to Australia. They're going back to Brazil. So, you know, like I don't see this sellout streak ending anytime soon.
Yeah. I wonder if they eventually go the route with pay-per-views like WWE is with trying to get fees. Site fees, you know, like, look.
I've heard there's going to be more of that. I mean, that was the deal. They were supposed to do a stadium show in London, but they're back to the O2 now. But I think, or Fight Island, Saudi, you know, they'll bring them in and they're getting big money for those shows.
Yeah.
Vegas, they're getting site fee in Vegas. They have a deal in Vegas where they have to do 4 pay-per-views a year and T-Mobile's giving them a site fee. Yep. That's why we always get those big main events in Vegas.
Yep.
You know, you're never going to see Conor McGregor fight anywhere but Vegas
right.
going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. We'll talk more about that a lot and all the other happenings throughout the final 3 episodes of this 4-episode series. So, January, February, March in the books. Obviously, we talked about Francis Ngannou, Colby Covington, Jorge Masvidal, guys that we would not see the rest of the year. But certainly some interesting developments coming up and especially with one Israel Adesanya. So we'll talk more about that in episodes. Paul, before we let you go, remind the people where they can hear you, feel you, listen to you, take in your words and your written words and your vocal words. The floor is yours.
Sure, yeah. I won't use the same line Mike Gilbert did about the feel you. That's his line. I'll let him stick it. But you can obviously read me on the F4W website. I do pretty much daily ratings articles now with so many pro wrestling TV out there. So that's the majority of my writing at this point. But I'm also doing the podcasting game, and you can find me on Fight Game Media. The free feed is just anywhere you find your podcasts, including this one. You just type in Fight Game Media into the search engine, and I do the In the Clinch MMA podcast. Drops every Tuesday morning with Ryan Frederick from this website, who also has done a number of Wrestling Observer Radio appearances this year. So you'll recognize him from that. And then we also have a Patreon, $5 a month, I've got a show on there with Jeff Hawkins. We cover the Dynamite show. AEW Dynamite every Wednesday night. As soon as the show's over, we're up an hour later with our immediate hot takes. And it's just $5 a month and you get the whole network. It's 8 shows a week between pro wrestling, boxing, mixed martial arts. Just patreon.com/fightgamemedia. And who knows? Maybe I'll get a show on F4W one of these days. I've been on the Fight Game podcast with Garrett Gonzalez a few times and Brian and Vinny, Wrestling Observer, you know, I'm always available when asked. And Josh, you know me, I'll come on this show anytime you ask me. You had a great year with this show.
Oh, thank you.
Everybody should search. Yeah, no, I mean, you had the Ariel interview. You've had some wrestlers. You've had some interesting journalists. I always look forward to your shows. And if people, you know what, over the holidays, if you got some listening, just go back and search Josh Nathan shows. There's a lot of good stuff out there. And this wrestling review series has been incredible.
Oh, great.
The Andrew Thompson one in particular was really good.
two hours.
That was, and it just flew by.
There's a lot to talk about. Yeah. And the rest of them are good too. So I appreciate that. And this series is good as well. So we'll talk more about, again, next month. It'll be April, May, and June. A lot of things that'll happen there. And we'll keep on going from there. So thanks so much, Paul. We'll talk to you next time. All right. Big thanks to Paul Fontaine for dropping by. Again, part one in the books, part two and three coming over the next couple weeks, with part four coming just after the first part of the new year. And yeah, it's always fun to look back at all the stuff that happens. And again, I've had my issues with MMA this year in terms of really being fully engaged, but it's still fun to kind of look back at some of the different machinations, the stuff that was promised, the stuff that was rumored, what actually did happen, didn't happen, and the things that did happen leading to things we didn't expect to happen. If that makes any sense. But yeah, Francis Ngannou, looking forward to hopefully seeing him again early 2023. Who knows? But Covington, Mazzal, it's crazy. All these major players, or at least in the UFC world, not on the chessboard really for the rest of the year. So yeah, maybe kind of attributing to that that star power failure or lack thereof that I'm kind of experiencing right now. But interesting stuff to come with the other three parts of the series. So yeah, Year in View and Pro Wrestling, two episodes happening this week if everything falls my way, which I believe it will. And yeah, we'll be off and running. Still a couple more podcasts a week as we get through the end of the year. And I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the great podcast hosts here on WrestlingObserver.com. Until next time, which probably just 48 hours. Insert catchphrase here.